The lab exam is open note next week. And by open note, I mean you can use your lab text, including the worksheets that you had filled out during the quarter, and you can use whatever notes that you had taken during the class as well. As long as it's in written format, you can use notes from outside sources as well. You just can't use anything that's electronic. So anything written that's your own notes or anything from the lab text, you're allowed to use. What I'm going to do is just go lab by lab and review what we had done this quarter to give you an idea of the types of topics I might ask about on the lab exam. So let's go back all the way to the first lab, which was on measurement. And as I go over the topics, if there's anything that you have questions about, this is the perfect time to ask me. So under measurement, we had talked about several topics that first lab. One was on the difference between precision and accuracy. One of those, precision being effectively how reproducible a result is, and the other, accuracy being essentially how correct a result is. You know that in terms of precision, though, there were really two definitions we had talked about. One was the reproducibility of results, but one also had to do with how many digits of information that you got out of some kind of device or even something like a ruler. So I remember in the notes that we had a discussion about different types of rulers, how many lines there were on a ruler, and then that would be related to the precision of that ruler. We didn't have any measure of precision that we went over, but we did have percent error as a measure of accuracy. Now, in the lab, we also talked about types of glassware. And what situations different types of glassware might be used in, which was largely connected to how precise or accurate the measurements from the glassware are. So, for example, if you have something like a beaker or an Erlenmeyer flask, both of those only have just a very few number of markings on them. So those are usually used just to hold large quantities of liquid. They're not usually used to measure things out. To measure, we might end up using a graduated cylinder if we wanted just moderate accuracy or precision. If we needed better than that, then there's the burette that we used a couple times during the quarter. And I don't recall if we had used it or not, but there's also the volumetric flask, which is one of the best pieces of equipment to use if you care about the numbers themselves. Volumetric flask can only measure one specific volume, though. So burette is a perhaps more common piece of glassware, and it is something that we used in the labs our own self. Now, since we had several occasions where we had measured out the volumes of liquids, we did talk about what a meniscus is, which is a curve that can develop on the surface of a liquid, which for water, it's a curve that points down, but for mercury, it's a curve that points up. And now, being at the end of the quarter, since we've talked about intermolecular forces, we've talked about polarity, it should make more sense when you go back and review the notes why it is that water ends up forming the curve down that it does in glass. And that's because water has extensive hydrogen bonding that it can undergo, and it does extensive hydrogen bonding with glass itself. So it's almost as if the water crawls up the sides of the glass because of the attraction that it has, which is why it ends up forming the curve that's pointed down. Mercury, the reason that it forms a curve pointed up is because it's not attracted to the glass. It's more attracted to itself, so it's like it pulls in on itself away from the glass, which is what causes it to bead up. At the same time we talked about the meniscus, we'd also talked about this effect known as parallax, which is something that can occur when you're measuring or observing a measurement on something like a burette. So suppose that you have a burette filled up to a particular liquid level. If you're looking from way above or from way below, it can make that level appear to be in a different place than it is. So in order to correctly read a burette in that situation, your eye level would need to be right level with the level of the liquid itself. So that appearance of the liquid level changing depending on your position is known as parallax. Now, it's going to come up later on, but since we're talking about types of glassware here, one concept that still seemed to confuse people later in the quarter was this issue of initial and final volume when using a burette. So when using your burette, the way that you're supposed to do the measurements is that you fill the burette up to whatever level you need to start with, you dispense the liquid, and then notice the liquid level after you're done. And the difference between the two levels is how much that you actually used. So when doing that process, when you fill it up, you don't try to account for how large is the burette, how much are you going to use. You simply write down whatever that volume was that the burette shows at the beginning, and that's what initial volume means. So initial volume does not mean how much did you originally use. It doesn't mean how much did you fill the burette up with. It just simply means what is the burette volume when you start. What is the reading that you get from reading the liquid level? And similarly, final volume doesn't mean how much did you use at the end. It means where did that liquid level end up? It's the difference between those two numbers that tells you how much liquid was actually used. Another topic, a slightly more painful topic that we went over in this first lab, was about significant figures. And we had talked about determining how many significant figures there are in a number based off the decimal point. And then we talked about what to do when we added or subtracted versus what do we do if we multiply or divide. For addition and subtraction, we line all the digits up. For multiplication and division, we simply look at how many digits there are. So based off of having your notes and the lab text, which in the back of the lab text is even a description of significant figures, you will have some kind of problem involving significant figures on your lab exam. So in the lecture exams, we ignored it completely, but you are going to have the topic back on the lab exam. The only thing else that we went over in lab on that first lab was the essential purpose of the lab, which was to measure density. So now a lecture topic would be to classify density as an intensive versus extensive property. But that's not what we did in the lab. All we did in the lab was to define what density is, the mass of a substance versus its volume, and we did some calculations of density. So they might be very straightforward, simple calculations, but you might have a calculation that you have to do similar to what was in the first lab. Those were all the topics that were in the first lab, so did anyone have any questions over any of those items? Okay, so moving on to the second lab, that was the percent water in popcorn. So I'll say mass percent of water. You need to have a general understanding of the procedure that we used, which the procedure ended up being slightly different, at least in one of the sections, than the way it was written in the lab text. And that was on the basis of suggestions I got from other instructors. The way that it's described in the lab is that you had a hot plate that you heated up some water, which then heated up another piece of glassware that the popcorn was in. We ended up, I think, maybe it was in both sections, where we ended up doing direct heating instead. So you just needed to know, why did we do that heating? The essential point was this, that popcorn, before you heated it, had some water content in it, and we were trying to drive off all of that water to come up with what the mass percent of water was. So in the notes, I didn't talk much about the procedure, but I do have the summary of the calculations that we did. So you would need to, if I gave you some data as far as what was the mass of a substance before heating, what was the mass of the substance after heating, you'd need to know how to determine the percent of water in that substance based off of those numbers. Now, one other thing that's not, I think, written in the notes, but it did get discussed both on the first day of the lab and in during the second lab as well, is what to do about measuring the mass of hot objects. The fact that if you put it on a balance, it's not so much that you might damage the balance, but you create these air currents inside the balance that can cause lift and can cause the numbers to be off very slightly from what they're supposed to be. So when you're measuring the mass of something that's hot, you do have to let it cool down somewhat in order to make sure that you don't have that lift effect. There wasn't really anything else we discussed in that lab. It was mainly just focusing on performing it and doing the calculations. So did anyone have any questions about the second lab? Yes. Unit conversion. I don't think we did any of that lab, did we? No, so lecture topics are not going to show up on the lab exam. And for the most part, the same is true the reverse direction. Whatever we talked about during the lab lectures is going to be on this lab exam next week. And then everything that's related to lecture, that's going to be on the final. Another question, yes.
So what about those lab lectures that overlapped with the written exam? I think line structures practice.
So some of the, I'm just about to get to that. So in fact, the very next lab was about Lewis dot structures. So there won't be any Lewis dot structures on the lab exam except for determining formal charge. Because we have it in the lab notes, because this is going to be an open note exam, I have decided to go ahead and include formal charge on the lab quiz, even though it won't be on the lecture exam. So out of the topics for the line structures, or not line structures, Lewis dot structures, you won't have to do the process where you're given a formula to then come up with what the Lewis dot structure is going to look like. I would give you a Lewis dot structure, but you would need to be able to calculate the formal charge for each of the atoms in that structure. Otherwise, none of that discussion is on the lab exam itself. Again, it's only the formal charge. Then for the molecular shapes discussion, that's not going to be on the lab exam at all. Because the only thing different that we did in lab versus lecture is I introduced some terminology from general chemistry. We had talked about electron pair geometry versus molecular geometry, which, to remind you all what that difference is, electron pair geometry is where we don't look at the differences between what types of electrons we're looking at in a structure. So what I mean by that is if we look at methane, CH4, it's got four equal bonds, so it forms a tetrahedral shape. If we look at ammonia, it's also got four pairs of electrons around the center, but it's three bonds and a lone pair. And that lone pair causes the geometry to distort just a little bit. But the two shapes, that last shape being trigonal pyramidal, the first shape being tetrahedral, they're so closely related in geometry that we have this family that both of the shapes belong in if we ignore the difference between a lone pair and a bonding pair. So that's what we had discussed in that lab, but it's really truly more of a lecture-related topic, which we didn't even talk about in lecture. So that lab you can totally skip. That means the next lab that we actually did was the antacid lab. So in that one, it's pretty much the same as with the mass percent of water lab. You need to have an understanding in general of what happened with the procedure. I'm not as likely to ask, what did you do in this step? What did you do in this step? I would ask probably more questions along the lines of, why did we do the lab the way that we did? So, for example, in this lab, we did have an indicator which was used to tell when effectively the experiment was over with. Because just to remind you, to summarize the procedure, we started out creating a solution of hydrochloric acid, which was supposed to mimic the contents of our stomachs. We added an antacid to that to neutralize some of the hydrochloric acid that was around, but then there was still some hydrochloric acid left. So then we did a titration with sodium hydroxide in order to figure out how much more base did we need in order to totally get rid of the stomach acid. So this indicator had been added to the stomach acid towards the beginning of the procedure, and it turned a pinkish color once we had gotten rid of all the acid. So again, the purpose of that indicator was essentially to let us know when we were done with the reaction. So all we ended up calculating was how many milliliters of the stomach acid solution, the hydrochloric acid, were neutralized by each gram of the antacid tablet itself. So you would need to be able to perform the same types of calculations. There wasn't any other theory that was related to the lab. Acid-base reactions, that's a lecture topic. Neutral versus neutralized, that's a lecture topic as well. So really the focus here will be, what did you do in the lab? And could you come up, if you were given a set of data, could you come up with the same results as far as what was the strength of that antacid tablet? How many milliliters of hydrochloric acid did it neutralize per gram of the tablet? Moving on from there, one moment. There wasn't much in the notes for that day, so let me see what was going on that day in lab. One second. Oh, that's right. Okay, so then the next lab was about the extraction, pulling out the fat from potato chips. I'm going to make it a decision just to leave that lab out. Partly because there isn't anything in the notes about what we had done. I had done it all just as a verbal discussion because I'd talked a little bit about extraction. But in terms of calculations, it's so similar to the mass percent of water calculations that I'd rather just leave the mass percent of water as far as the lab that you're actually going to be quizzed on. The last two of the labs, the organic molecules and DNA, neither of those are going to be on the lab exam as well. In the case of the organic molecules, it's because all it was really doing was supporting lecture. So you already had questions now on line structures and functional groups. So I don't see the point of repeating that in the lab exam. So no organic molecules. And then similarly, DNA, if I was going to ask about DNA, it really would be from the lecture perspective. But in terms of the lab, it was really just to get a chance to be able to see that separation of DNA from a plant material. So there's not going to be anything about that lab on the lab exam as well. So the lab exam is going to be pretty heavily skewed to the first two experiments, because that's where we had done an awful lot more of the discussion. But beside that, there is the formal charge on Lewis structures, and then there's the antacid lab. Are there any questions about the content of any of the labs for the lab exam? In terms of the exam format, it's going to be similar to what you might expect in the lectures. So there might be some definitions, especially for things like precision and accuracy. You'll have some small calculation problems, like for percent mass of water or percent error. There might be questions of theory questions, like why did we do a procedure a particular way? So again, similar in format to the lecture exams.